Amen. Remaining cases. And we're ready. We're ready for argument number case number three, which I gather is U.S. versus De La Cruz.
Good morning. May it please the court. The specific facts and the legal principle that we are here on is, I guess, so unique that, and that can be evidenced by the fact that neither the government nor the defendants or the appellants were able to come up in the history of American jurisprudence with this being applied or rejected to a specific criminal case. And I think it's important to understand exactly, and perhaps this was a failure on the appellant's part of labeling their issue presented for review, but what the appellant's position is as far as, and what we're asking the court to do, is adopt a principle that would be applicable only in the most narrow of circumstances. This is not an issue where we're arguing about intent. The appellants concede that is strictly a jury question. The question we're asking before the court is whether funds were misapplied. The government argued and repeats in its brief that the misapplication of funds were due solely based on the appellant's violations of certain procedural municipal law or state laws based solely for municipal corporations. The briefs go through those requirements as far as proper appropriation from a city council, approval of contracts by a board of works, specifications by an engineering department, and so forth. So Indiana law becomes extraordinarily relevant. If there's no violation of municipal laws under state law, then there is no misapplication of funds, and thus this one essential element of 18 U.S.C. 666 fails. It is true that initially the city engaged in this sidewalk project in a haphazard manner and did not get many of these prior approvals. That has never been in dispute, and the record is very clear on that. Indiana law, however, provides, as far as law regarding municipal corporations, provides for such instances and recognizes that in the course of business, a municipal corporation or a city or a county council or so on is going to get things backwards. Provided that the city had the authority to act in the first place and that they go through the proper steps, there's a specific statute in Indiana that allows for what would otherwise be an invalid act because of procedural lapses to be ratified.
Could it ever be illegal for the city to do work on private property?
Yes, Your Honor, it can. And
really?
In fact,
I've never heard of that. But
well,
that's Indiana. Maybe. I don't know. In Wisconsin that. The city of Milwaukee could pave my driveway.
With regards to most towns in Indiana, the correct answer to that would be no. And certainly public funds cannot be expended, except in very, very limited circumstances, on private property. This was in 1997, several cities received casinos. And a few cities, East Chicago in particular, negotiated through their attorney three different additional non-required sources of revenue. It was a voluntary agreement by the casino and far in addition to their tax dollars. The government in their brief acknowledges two of these 1% funds are private and can be used for private purposes. The government disagrees with the one that was used to pay for the private concrete work. Under the record, the lady from the State Board of Accounts, Cynthia David, issued, and I question whether she was competent to issue this opinion, but her opinion was that solely because this is a subsection of the city's pooled account, it was public money. However, as we have cited in our brief, how Indiana law looks to determine whether money is public or private, and Indiana law acknowledges the right for public institutions to hold money as a trustee. You look to the source, and this 246 fund, which paid for all of the private work once it was allocated by the engineer, and again, I have to stress that when the allocation was done and this ratification was performed, every single item of the ratification was done through the advice of Attorney Shanahan, and he was the one that actually prepared the documents. He was.
Now, did you divide up the public and private?
Yes, and that was done at attorney advice as well, right, consistent with John Garcia's testimony on the record.
Now, there were two funds that you get from the casino, at least the ones I read. One, what were the names of those?
Your Honor, there was the Twin Foundations Trust,
Well, I don't know, need to know the exact name, but didn't one have some name that related to public works or something?
No, nothing. No title was specifically given to public works. There were three. The private negotiation was that there were three separate funds that each one received 1% of the casino's revenue. Two were put in. The appellants weren't the ones who organized how these trusts were formed and initially back in 1997, but two were put in separate trust accounts with trustees, and the government does not dispute that those are private, non-public, and can be used for private purposes. The third one was just in a subsection, 246, in the city's pooled bank account. Why it was put there is unknown, and the record is silent upon it. Kim Yulks' testimony at trial, and she is the city planner, was that the general understanding was that was the mayor's own trust, that it could be used for private purposes. In fact, Mr. Maldonado was quoted at trial as telling Mr. Poros the casino, a special fund in the casinos, from the casino is paying for it. Mr. Kalinsis, a co-defendant, was quoted in real time as saying that. The attorney,
so if under that theory, then if this is money that could be used for private purposes, the mayor could, if the mayor decided that he wanted to put a 5,000 square foot addition onto his house, that could be paid for on that fund.
Your Honor, I'm not competent, because I practice criminal law, to answer that question. I know that the record, there is nothing on the record, but that everything was done through the advice of counsel, and to answer.
So, if you got a lawyer to say you could do it, then you could go.
Well, it was done certainly before any federal investigation. It was done in real time, and they didn't have to do it. In fact, they discussed not paying the contractors, which the appellants cite case law saying that the contractors wouldn't have even been entitled to quantum merit. The city could have reaped an unjust windfall, but it was the unanimous decision of the city council, the mayor's office, as it was throughout this project, to ratify what was always the city's intentions. And to get back to the question as far as things, whether things were separated into public or private, when the attorney was hired, and he goes about recommending the acceptance of a competitive unit price bid by the Board of Works and gets the engineer certifying all the work that was done, it was his advice, according to John Garcia, the engineer, that the attorney said break it out into public and private. Now, these two appellants, nor any named defendant, were not responsible for defining what was public or private, and I know the government takes issue with that. But it was that was broken out, and it was his advice, as is in Defendant's Exhibit 55, which is contested in the appellant's Issue 2, that 246, that trust fund, could pay for the private work, and in fact...
Yeah, that's a Showboat East Chicago Development Fund.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. And all money paid on private property was credited out of that trust fund account, and then the general accounting paid for all the public work. And I think most importantly is that if the government, who has the burden of proof, took issue with what Attorney Shanahan said and the advice that he gave and the correctness thereof, then they should have either called him or another person competent to make an expert opinion to show that this was not proper. And what we suggest is on the record, based solely on the record, that there is nothing to disprove the propriety of this. And again, I do not practice municipal law.
Was this an argument made to the jury, or was the jury instructed on this, these separate funds, one for private, one for public?
Yes, Your Honor. And this was I guess this was the common theme throughout. There were two issues at trial. One was intent, which is clearly a jury question. The other was this ratification and Attorney Shanahan's advice and the city's as an entirety. And again, we're talking about six people out of probably 100 who participated in this sidewalk program. Their reliance on Attorney Shanahan's advice, and it came through in probably 9 or 10 witnesses. The jury was, we submitted numerous jury instructions with regards to the issue of the ratification. The judge granted some and declined to give others, but the jury was instructed on ratification.
The argument was, or at least the evidence was, I guess, that the mayor controlled that money. Did the mayor testify?
The mayor was not called as a witness, Your Honor. And neither defendant presented any defense. But the mayor did not testify, nor did his assistants. And that came out through the city planner. It came out through the president of the Board of Works, George Weems. Came out in some part with the private engineer, John Garcia, certainly with the city engineer, Pedro Poros. And I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Mr. Holler?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Ratification has never been recognized as a criminal defense by any court, and this court should not recognize it as a criminal defense in this case.
Why was the jury instruction given then?
The jury instruction was given, if you look at the jury instructions, they're in the record at record 198. The issue that was put before the jury was the issue of intent. Was there intent to misapply the money? All of the instructions were related to the question of, did these defendants intend at the time they were taking the actions they were doing to misapply the money? The government argued that there was no evidence of ratification and shouldn't be present in the case, but they were allowed to resolve the issue essentially as a question to decide whether they were taking actions in good faith, whether they were acting at the time they were acting to attempt to ratify actions that they had done essentially through negligence, or whether they were intending to influence an election and essentially by voters.
Okay, so you did not agree to the submission of a jury instruction on quote-unquote a ratification defense.
We did not submit. Here's essentially what happened. If you read the instruction conferences in the November 8th Volume 2 transcript, we submitted instructions. We did not submit any instructions on ratification. We essentially opposed the ratification issue and felt it was a non-issue throughout the case. The defendants did submit instructions on ratification. One of the issues that the defendants submitted was a ratification instruction that was not actually given by the court because we objected to it given as phrased. As it was given, the instruction as to what ratification is a correct statement of the law. The initial instruction that was submitted stated that the city council could ratify their own illegal acts. In fact, if you look at Indiana law, if you look all the way back to Schneck versus City of Jeffersonville, which is their leading case on ratification, what a ratification is and was in that case is City of Jeffersonville, Indiana, passed some bonds. A court later determined that those bonds were invalid, and the state legislature overruled the courts, as they can do in their state system and can happen with Congress in this federal system, and said, we find that these bonds are valid because they were at the time believed to be valid.
I get the answer to Judge Sykes' question is, did you object to the instruction, ratification instruction as given?
As modified, no, because it's a correct statement of law. But if you read what the instructions state that what we have to prove, we're not trying state violations, we're trying federal criminal violations. We had to prove that the defendants intentionally misapplied money. And what the court instructed the jury was that in deciding This would be instruction 24. A person misapplies money or property when he knowingly and intentionally applies an entity's funds to a use the person knows to be contrary to a restriction placed on the entity. Then what you can do is to look at state laws, regulations, and city ordinances to consider them only in determining the defendant's intent and to establish a fiduciary duty on behalf of the defendant. So the, although the jury was instructed that they could consider ratification, they were only to consider it on the issue of the defendant's intent. That's the way this entire case was presented as a to the extent that it's a question of fact, it's a question of intent. And that's the only way that the jury was supposed to consider the ratification issue. Now, the defendants did argue, as part of their Rule 29 motion, that they had established ratification as a matter of law. And what I believe Mr. Truitt has been arguing to this court is he's not raising the issue of what was in the jury instructions and what was given to the jury as a question of fact. Did ratification in some way show that there was intent, but the legal question, and they clearly have not established ratification as a matter of law. The district court was quite correct to deny any sort of claim on that basis. Ratification has never been recognized as a criminal defense, and all of the facts in this case established that there was no valid ratification. The city, Judge Evans, you're quite correct. The city, Indiana, is not different from Wisconsin, and East Chicago is not different from every other city in Indiana.
Well, let's not go that
well,
far.
East Chicago is East Chicago is different from every other city in Indiana, but it's still in Indiana. It's not in Wonderland. I mean, it's Humpty Dumpty here, where a word means whatever it's we say it means. They've redefined private property and public property.
If for example, there had been no private, no driveways, no swimming pools, no whatever, there'd only been sidewalks and curbs, do you think ratification could have been applied then?
Not on the criminal case.
No, I mean under Indiana law.
If the question is under Indiana law, if someone was filing a taxpayer action, as was done in Schneck versus City of Jeffersonville, if they could establish that they essentially negligently failed to take proper procedural steps, then there is perhaps a way they could have done that. In this particular case, they couldn't have done that because these actions could not have been legally approved in advance. They never even took the step of bidding out the work. So I don't think that you can. I don't think under Indiana law, under these circumstances, an Indiana state court would say you can go back and use a unit price bid. You can change public and private definitions. I don't think an Indiana court would rule that. I don't know because this was never taken to Indiana state court.
Does the government dispute that there were private funds, that is, the negotiated arrangements with the casino that provided private funds in that municipal account?
Absolutely, the government disputes that. And the State Board of Accounts disputed that, too. I mean, the Indiana State Board of Accounts disputed that, and the Indiana government has sued in federal court claiming that's not true.
What happened? How are those funds dealt with?
How are they dealt with? That's in the testimony of Cynthia David, Your Honor. They're put into a big pool. They're put into a big pool in a bank account at National City Bank with every other city dollar. They're very distinct from the Twin City Fund and the East Chicago Community Development Fund, the two funds you're talking about, which are established as nonprofit 501c3 foundations.
They have separate bank accounts?
Those two funds do. Those funds were not touched. They're not involved in this litigation. The money that the defendants are talking about is the 246 fund. And that's because it's fund number 246 out of the 500 or 900, however many city funds there are.
Is this the Showboat East Chicago Development Fund?
Yes. That money is put into, this is the testimony of Cynthia David, and it's also clear in all of the state records. It's put into one big bank account, commingled with federal funds, commingled with state tax dollars, commingled with fines, fees. Everything goes into one big bank account. It's not a trust. It doesn't have any of the characteristics of a trust. This is something that was come up with after the fact. The other point, and the point that was critical at trial, was when Mr. Maldonado, the controller, Mr. Truitt's client, was paying the bills during the project, they didn't pay a single dime out of this fund that they supposedly intended to use to pay for the entire project. Now, if there isn't evidence of criminal intent that's stronger than that, it's pretty hard to come by. They weren't using this. This is all something that was come up with after the fact. They're claiming that they are relying on the defense of an attorney that the record established was not consulted until May 31st, when the project was stopped after the election, after May 4th. So, again, they're asking, it's Lewis Carroll. They're asking you to believe six impossible things before breakfast and conclude that somehow this was in some way proper.
So the casino money comes into the city coffers and it's commingled with other general purpose.
With every other asset.
And it's not in some special purpose fund.
No.
And are there any specific restrictions on its use, or is it just subject to the general restrictions that apply to any expenditure of city funds?
There are no restrictions on its use. It comes into the city through a contract. The city entered into a contract with the casino boat that says it is for development purposes in the city of East Chicago. Now, it's put in commingled with all other money, so whatever restrictions there are on public funds are going to be as applicable to that fund as any other fund. There was a total of about, the numbers are cited in my brief, it's the amount of money. It's approximately $2 million per year that comes in through that fund. And again, keep in mind that in 10 weeks, the defendant spent almost $24 million on sidewalks. So once again, the issue that was before the jury was the question of intent. And the evidence all showed they didn't intend to use this, and that they're not challenging that finding. So the only thing that they are challenging is that as a matter of law, what they did was proper. And there, Judge Kaney, again, just for the very basic, even if one wanted to conclude that this could have been proper as to some aspects of it, there certainly are aspects where it was not proper, and therefore they haven't established the defense as a matter of law. But we don't think it was proper at all.
The other two funds, there were two other trust funds, separate bank accounts, trustees, I assume, for those funds?
Yes, there are separate trustees. They're kept in separate bank accounts. There wasn't too much discussion of it. I mean, really, the only discussion of those funds occurred are cited in my brief. But that money was not touched. It would be on the October 15th transcript day. I believe it was came in through the testimony of Kim Jones. Those are private funds. They're not audited by the state. So that's where that money is. In fact, if one looks at the record, the attorneys initially proposed use private money use the development fund, the community development fund, not the showboat development fund, to pay for private work. Well, the problem with that is there's $24 million worth of private work, and it would have taken 12 years to pay off the contractors for the illegal acts that the defendants perpetrated.
Now, the one thing that's odd here is in a case like this, you're ordinarily looking for bribes or kickbacks or something to the public officials. And apparently here, if I'm wrong, tell me, but this is all done just so you can ingratiate yourself to the voters and be reelected? Do this massive sidewalk work in the city and you're buying a landslide or what? I just don't understand it. There's no kickback here. That none of these public officials
in this particular
line their pockets here.
In this particular charged act, there were no specific bribes or kickbacks. Now, we've charged other city officials, and maintaining that grip and that hold on power is important. I mean, you have to consider your honor.
I can understand that, but it's maybe good to be a councilman and for other reasons. But in this whole concrete project, which was 10 weeks or so before the election, you know, you put a sign for the mayor or a councilman on your front lawn and we'll do your sidewalk or driveway.
That's correct, Your Honor. I mean, the Indiana Supreme Court in 2004 had to rerun the 2003 election because there was so much voter fraud. This is a constant pattern in the city of East Chicago, and that kind of fraud and corruption occurs in their elections. It's somewhat endemic, and they flaunt and violate the law. And in this case, they flaunted and violated federal law. And when they knowingly and intentionally do that, that is a federal crime. I agree. But there's a separate part of 666. It's 666A1B that deals with bribes, and this deals with intentional misapplication or misappropriation of funds.
Is this the case president? I'm sorry. Is the council president still a fugitive as of today?
Yes, he is.
Was this case tried in Hammond or South Bend?
It was tried in South Bend, Your Honor. I have time remaining. On the other issues, Your Honor, we believe the legal opinion letter that the defendants are seeking to admit is a clear example of hearsay. It was not a matter that was either observed by any Indiana state official, nor does it set forth any of the activities of the office or agency. Frankly, it would be no different than the defendants trying to get the clerk of this court to admit the opinion letter because it's appeared in an appendix to a brief. It's simply not any sort of...
Who requested the opinion letter? Who requested it? The opinion letter.
Under state procedures, they are permitted to file a response to the Indiana State Board of Accounts report. And if a response is filed, is included in the public record. But I don't think that it really matters whether, even if a response is requested, it doesn't set forth the duties or activities of the agency. It doesn't. It's not any particular action they observed. It's a response, and it's again on a legal issue. If they wanted to call Mr. Shanahan to offer some sort of legal opinion, they were free to do it. But it's his out-of-court statement. It's his statement in August 2001 as to the legality of these matters. And again, that's no different than Mr. Truitt writing a brief and filing it in response to an order of the court and then saying this is a public record. There's no difference on that point.
I gather then he wasn't called to testify.
He was not called to testify by either party. He did testify at Mr. Kalinsis' sentencing hearing, so some of his testimony is in the record. And he pretty much establishes that, you know, he never advised the city that they could redefine what public and private property is, and essentially that a lot of the information that he made was either ignored by other people involved in the city, including people who were not charged, the government does acknowledge that, or was misinterpreted, I guess one could say. The final issue was the loss amount issue, and we don't believe that the district court clearly erred. The city was not permitted to decide how it wanted to spend its money through the proper and appropriate channels, and the district court made clear findings as to that fact. Under those circumstances, the loss amount in all of the cases that we have cited, we believe clearly establishes the loss that the district court set forth. And so if the court has no further questions, we
On the loss issue, was the private expenditures versus the public expenditures, was there a differentiation of that?
We did submit that for purposes of sentencing, and a total of $10.7 million, a minimum, it's hard to establish, but a minimum of $10.7 million was on private property. But I don't think, again, that matters, Your Honor. The loss was incalculable. In some cases, sidewalk was ripped up that didn't need to be and is now pitted and causes drainage problems and things of that nature. The loss here, as in the Frost case, where the Department of Education might perhaps have chosen in its wisdom to give some of the loans to the students, the court still said you deprived them of the opportunity to go through the proper channels to make that determination. And so that's the loss amount, and at a minimum, it was not clear error for Judge Miller to make that Chief Judge Miller to make that determination. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Truitt, how much time? You have 4 minutes, Mr. Truitt.
Thank you, Your Honor. To address what Mr. Holler argued, first, with the idea of ratification never being applied before as a criminal defense, I agree with that, and we're not asking for this to be a uniformly applied precedent where a victim, certainly a private citizen, could ratify a crime. Certainly, if I have an intent to steal something, I can't go back in time and change that intent. But what differentiates all the cases concerning ratification in the government's brief is that what's present here is an actual statute, state statute, which is the will of the Indiana legislature saying that acts can be ratified. And so therefore, and there's case law that says it has the effect of original authority. It's backdated. So therefore, what our argument is that because of that, there was never a misapplication, since the government's theory is that the misapplication is founded on state law violations. We can't cherry-pick state law. We have to look at it as a whole. And whether we agree with it or not, and whether we would vote that way if we were a state legislature or governor, it was the will of the legislative branch and signed by the governor. With regards to the sidewalk program and Mr. Holler stating that the city was never able to decide, that's not necessarily true. The city planner was at all times aware of this. the mayor and Simons obeyed his testimony. Rogers obeyed his testimony. Numerous others. The mayor himself was very active out there on the streets monitoring the sidewalk work. Just named in the brief, not the unanimous vote thereafter, but not only the three councilmen who were indicted in this indictment, one other who was indicted, Mr. Artis, and Mr. Kuros, so that's at least a majority of five on the city council, and I suggest to the court that the evidence is replete that there was many more, were out there at all times. The Board of Works were approving these pay claims at their monthly meetings in real time, well before this ratification issue. The Parks Department was out working and trimming trees and monitoring this. The city engineer and numerous employees of the city engineer. The record is replete with evidence that the entirety of the executive and legislative branches of the city in real time were doing this. Ms. Yolks talks about the power, and as does Mr. Weems, held by the two special assistants to the mayor. They were behind it all. Our position is it wasn't illegal, and that. But I bring that up to evidence that the city did decide in real time, and well before this was there was ever any investigation.
Isn't the ratification statute specifically limited to those actions that could have been approved in advance, but for whatever reason, inadvertence or other reason, were not approved in advance, and much of what was done in this case was incapable of being legalized after the fact?
You're right, Your
Most
Honor.
Most of the private improvements, if not all of the private improvements, the patios, the swimming pools, the dog runs, and all the rest of it.
You're right, Your Honor, in that that is a specific portion of the ratification statute. Again, and I hate to defer, I do not practice municipal law. No one competent to testify testified otherwise that it couldn't be done through this private trust. And again, the funding of whether money is public or private under Indiana law, and is cited in my brief, comes from the source of the money. And this 246 account, as well as those other trusts, came from the exact same document, from the exact same negotiation, the exact same agreement as the two trusts that Mr. Holler concedes is private and can be used for private money. Somehow it was an accounting error. And based solely on the record, this was allowable. Coming from Valparaiso, Indiana, without a casino, I think it's crazy. But the record is clear, or the only thing on the record, is that for as little common sense as it makes, it was proper. And again, that was the harm in allowing Cynthia David to issue opinions through Defense Exhibit 55 without including the response, which she concedes she has to put in and would be incomplete without, and that's the harm in not submitting Defendant's Exhibit 55 to the jury. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Truitt. Thanks to both sides. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move to the fourth case for today.